Welcome. You're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast, and this is episode 13. Hey, welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me here for episode 13 of the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and today I am joined by the sea captain himself, Brad Parnell of Steadfast Creative.
Steadfast Creative is an extraordinary web development and consulting firm delivering awe-inspiring results since 2006. Brad shares his journey with us as a husband and a father who was looking to do more and be more. He took the steps that allowed for him to have an opportunity of a lifetime upon being laid off. Listen in as Brad shares his journey. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
I'm good, Lori. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. Great. Thank you for your time this morning.
Sure, absolutely. Glad to be a part of this. Thanks for reaching out.
Certainly. Our show is designed to assist entrepreneurs in hearing the journey, finding the pain, and helping to create a solution for entrepreneurs whom are our guests. And for our listeners, we are hoping that they are able to derive new business ideas from, you know, listening to that journey. So before we hop into your journey with Steadfast Creative, tell us a little bit about how you once saw the future before it became your reality.
That's a great question. So future before it became my reality was, you know, I started out just by doing some freelance work on the side while having a full-time job just to really help support my family. I was raised in a family where my mother didn't have to work, so I had it ingrained in myself that I really wanted to keep my wife at home and really be able to provide for her and my newborn son at the time. So a lot of it was just birthed out of a desire to bring in more money, to be quite frank, just to help support my family and let my wife be able to stay home with my one child at the time and let her be free just to take care of the kiddo. So I never really dreamed of, you know, having staff and growing into a larger company, which is where it is now. But before Steadfast, it was really just a dream of providing for my family.
Certainly. And just kind of building that future for the three of you so that she could stay home. And I completely understand my mother. You know, I'm one of four kids and my father did the same. You know, just built himself up so that my mother could stay home and raise all four of us. And so I understand completely. It's important. What were some of the first steps that you took once you decided it was time to go ahead and begin working for yourself and branding Steadfast Creative?
So what happened was towards the end of my journey where I was full-time employed and doing freelance, you know, I was trying to have my cake and eat it too, so to speak. I was working really hard at keeping my full-time job, having all the benefits, really just having the luxury of knowing I had a steady paycheck coming in. And at the same time, my freelance business was exploding. I was making almost twice as much just doing freelance, and that was all during the weekends and at night. So I would stay up till 3 in the morning every night and then get up in the morning and do my day job. And there started to be such a crossover, you know, with clients needing to talk during the day and me having to try to schedule meetings around my lunch breaks. There was one point where I was driving to a meeting for my full-time job, and I ended up having a very severe migraine where, you know, I started seeing double and my legs became numb and I had to pull over on the side of the road. And it was really all due to lack of sleep and increased stress. And that was one of my first signs that I really needed to make a decision and that this wasn't a sustainable way of life or doing business. That was kind of my first big cue of, I've got to do something. I can't do this forever. And so what ended up happening was, you know, my freelance kept pouring over into my day job of people needing me and me needing to be attentive to other clients. So something had to give, and that ended up being my full-time job. I wish I could say it was a really graceful exit, but honestly, it got to a point where they had to let me go because I was just so unfocused. And, you know, I learned a lot from that, and I'm in a completely new position now, kind of looking back and saying, man, I wish I could do that over again, and I didn't handle that very well. But that was the point of my very first day as the entrepreneur, solely doing my business, was the day that I got let go from my full-time.
That's exciting, actually, Brett. You were so lucky at that point, you know, because there are so many people who decide that they want to become an entrepreneur or, you know, have this idea that's tickling at them, but are not capable of attaining that, you know, cash flow in their, you know, entrepreneur or solopreneur venture prior to leaving their full-time job. So the fact that you had already had this up and running for yourself in the background before leaving or being let go from that position, that's outstanding that you had that going for yourself. Once you did take that step away and you were full-time entrepreneur, what is it that you decided to do once you said, okay, I now have clients that I'm working with daily and I'm, you know, I'm growing this business. What did you feel like were some of the first steps that you took at that point?
You know, honestly, I felt like I had such a good past few years of running a freelance business by doing, you know, project management and invoicing and delivering on the work. I mean, I wore every single hat. So the only difference was now I could do this during the day. And it, yeah. I've got to tell you, Lori, it was one of the best feelings of being able to wake up and just go to a coffee shop and do what I love to do, but it not be 3 a.m. anymore. It was now all I got to focus on.
That's outstanding. And I know there are many, many people who look forward to that moment as well, because it is a difficult road when you're juggling both of those positions at once and you're trying to make that change. I can imagine how wonderful that was that morning when you were able to. So excellent, and kudos. What did you find to be one of the most difficult parts once you made that transition, once you woke up that morning and said, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to do anything but what I love all day long? What did you find to be the most difficult part of that? And how did you overcome it?
That's a great question. You know, in the type of work that I do, it's all very creative. So as you know, most creatives aren't normally the best business people or the most savvy or even the most outgoing and social. I feel like I had a little bit of advantage because I was very active in the community. I knew how to connect with people, how to build relationships, and I knew how to do some of the design and the developing side as well. So I think the biggest thing for me is as my business was scaling, you know, I had to make some decisions of what am I going to do to continue to focus on the business side, creating the processes, making sure that it's scalable, and also that I'm staying very focused on the creative side of making sure that what I'm selling is going to be the best quality product, doing the best that I can do without sacrificing on either of the two. And so that's a little bit later in my journey and story. But initially, that was probably the biggest thing that I dealt with, was making sure that I was staying balanced and full on both the creative side and on actually being the entrepreneur and trying to run my business side.
Certainly, trying to balance it out and find time to work both on as well as in the business.
That's right.
Completely understood. And what do you feel like you did to assist yourself in keeping that balance there?
You know, over a short amount of time, I brought on my first part-time designer who was also a developer. And he was, you know, very much on the production side, which helped me focus a little bit more on the management side. While I was still doing a little bit of design, that was the beginning part where I first started to release some of the production work that I had done in the past, and I started to relinquish that onto someone else to help me. So that was able to help me really refocus on bringing in the work and managing the business and managing some of the projects.
Excellent. And that's something that, you know, I've spoken about before, definitely taking the time to recognize when you need to begin delegating those tasks. When you begin growing to a point where you have to figure out how to balance, that's generally where you begin having to delegate and figure out how can I bring on another person that would be able to assist me in that area. So while managing the business side, what is it that you found to be the area where you began forming your operational procedures? What is it that you found to be difficult about creating those procedures, you know, when you began delegating?
That's a great question. So in our line of work, you know, we're a creative shop, and everything that we do, you know, it can follow kind of a large, you know, the boundaries of process and procedure. But at the end of the day, we're really trying to solve for the client and create something that's new and fresh and that doesn't feel like we're going through standard processes and standard procedures to get to a finish line. So it was the balance of trying to create something that felt very fresh and creative and let our minds explore new ideas and not have to hold to a if A, then B. But at the same time, having some sort of process as we began to hire and began to grow, that we weren't just starting from a clean slate every new time we brought on a new project or a new client. And so some of that was, you know, very, very high-level processes, like a four-step procedure. Every client goes through these. And within that, there's a lot of areas for wiggle room and growth where we can explore and be creative.
What would you say for a prospective entrepreneur who's just kind of getting into this and beginning to build their business? How would you, what would you caution them on, and what would you explain to them, you know, in terms of their procedures and processes? Where should they begin? When do you feel like an entrepreneur should really begin sitting down and forming those in a formalized manner?
I think the key is putting revenue ahead of expense, not going out there and getting big office space, all the supplies you need. You can work from a laptop or even an iPad. I mean, you can run a business from your home like I did nights and weekends to at least prove that you can create a cash flow. Because without paying clients and without cash flow, you don't have a business. You could have the best idea in the world, but if you're not solving a problem that people are willing to pay for, then you're not really set up for success. So you've got to prove to yourself first that you've got a product or an idea or a solution that can generate some cash. And just take it a step at a time and always remember to put your revenue ahead of your expenses.
Certainly. What would you caution as one of the biggest mistakes that first-time entrepreneurs tend to make?
You know, the revenue ahead of expense, as well as just making sure that you've got everything set up financially for, you know, sales tax, for quarterly taxes, for employee taxes when you start bringing out employees. That stuff adds up really fast and really quickly. So if you don't have a game plan and you don't understand what you need to be paying, that can easily swallow you up and hurt your business very early on.
Certainly. You always have to have a plan. And I've stated this before time and again. I tell people, those, you know, who achieve wealth, you know, you can easily lose it if you don't have a plan.
Right.
Only those who have a plan will maintain wealth once it's achieved. So our show, Technology Equality, is created so that our listeners can hear your journey, find the pain, and assist in creating a solution in an industry that they may not have thought of before. So Brad, you went out and you found the pain in an industry and you began serving that pain in the best manner that you could. So what I'm hoping to do is allow for my listeners to hear the pain in an industry and begin creating solutions for you. So Brad, if in fact you had a magic wand and could change anything in your business, what would it be and why? We want to know how the pain impacts business for you on a day-to-day basis.
That's good. So it's a lot of what I just spoke about, and ironically, I wish I could have applied that to myself. And unfortunately, it's taken me a few years to get to that point, and now I'm having to go back and fix past mistakes. But you know what? I've got a goal, I've got a plan, and I'm determined to get there. But you know, I am not an accountant, and that is one of my shortcomings. So you know, I fail to always put back the right amount of taxes. And, you know, my industry, we do have to charge state sales tax. So if I had a magic wand, I would make sure that I had those plans in place early on. I knew the right amounts to put back and that I was, you know, current on all taxes. And that's just being transparent. And, you know, we've got a plan for it now, but speaking into young entrepreneurs looking to start something up, young business owners, It seems like a lot, and sometimes it seems like it's unfair, but it's something that you have to do. And if you start it now and just make that just a part of your process and a part of your daily and monthly activities and routines, is always making sure that you have enough put back. You know, that's something, if I had a magic wand, I would go back and tell myself, make sure you're putting this back and make sure that you are always current.
That's excellent, Brad. Thank you. You're 100% right. When it comes to starting your business, if you don't take the time to research into, you know, what fees you may actually come across in your industry, because taxes are taxes for everyone and for every business. Granted, taxes, fees, and professional fees vary across the industries. So prior to getting started, it really is important to make the time to look into what fees and industry costs you may run up against prior to starting, so that you do have that cushion and that little bit put away or just enough so that you know you're stable for the future. So Brad, thank you. I appreciate all of your input here today. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with our audience. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everyone for listening in. And Lori, thank you for having me on the show today. I really appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at Brad Parnell. That's BRADPARNELL. And also my company's website is steadfastcreative.com. We're just about to relaunch here, I think this week, so you can kind of check out some of the work we do. Would love to hear from you if you guys have any questions or want to connect with me. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Just search Bradley Parnell, and look forward to hearing from you. And thanks again, Lori.
All right, guys. I hope you really enjoyed that interview. And Brad, thank you so much again for your time, your expertise, and sharing everything with our audience. You can find Brad Parnell at steadfastcreative.com.
Or you can reach out to Brad through our brand new show notes page at technologyequality.com/Brad Parnell. Don't wait until it hits the fan. Get started now. Prepare for what could come up. Like Brad said, he wishes he could have prepared for the taxes and things of that sort to pop up when he first began. Make sure that you look into all of the avenues that could stall or postpone you as you move through your startup, and make the preparations for those situations now. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.